We're holding on Samach Aleph Amud Beis by the Mishnah. We talked in the previous Mishnah about a man not marrying an Ilonis, which is a woman who's not going to be able to have, who's going to be not only infertile, but has certain physical characteristics that show that she's never going to be fertile. We'll talk about her in more detail later on around Daf Pei. Anyway, we said in the previous Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said a Kohen shouldn't marry her because in his opinion, that's the definition of Zoyna. The Chachamim disagreed, but they do agree that he can't marry her if it's going to interfere with Puruvu. So the Chachamim in the previous Mishnah said that if he has another wife and or other children, then fine. So now our Mishnah is continuing on that topic of Puruvu. The Mishnah says, Lo yibotel adam b'piru v'rivya. A person should not withhold himself from piru v'rivya, which means, in other words, for example, if he hasn't met the criteria that are mentioned in our Mishnah, then he has to get married. He has to remarry. He has to marry a woman who's capable of having children, etc. Elin ken yesh le bonim, unless he has children. Now, what do we mean by children? Beshama'im shnei zchorim. Beshama said the minimum is that he has two boys. But according to Beshamai, if he were to have a boy and a girl, he has not yet fulfilled the mitzvah of Puruvu, as we'll see in the Gemara why Beshamai said that. Or Beshilalim Zachor in a cave. Beshilal says the minimum is one boy and one girl. Shanema, as Beshilal says, you have the pasuk in Bereshis, Zachor in a cave of Bram. When Hashem created the world, he created one male and one female. And therefore, when you're following that in future generations, then one male and one female is enough to be yotze the mitzvah. So the Gemara starts off. Now the implication is the Mishnah is not saying that once he has this amount of children, according to Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel respectively, that he's allowed to. The Mishnah is not saying that he's allowed to stay unmarried at that point. All it's saying is he's able to be bottled from Piriya Viriya, meaning, for example, at that point. So let's say he was married, had a boy and a girl, according to Beis Hillel, or two boys, according to Beis Shammai. Let's say his wife passed away, then the Mishnah seems to be implying at that point he still has to get remarried. He's not supposed to remain unmarried, as we're going to see in a second. All it is he's not required at this point to marry a woman who's capable of having children. So it sounds, because that's what the Mishnah is implying, because otherwise the Mishnah could have said that once he did Piri Varivya, then he doesn't have to get married. So Messiah, let Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel, this supports what Rav Nachman tells us in the name of Shmuel. The Omar, Afafish Yesh Lada Adam, Kamabonim, he says, even if a person has many children, also Lamed Belo Isha, he's not allowed to remain unmarried. Shenema Loi Toiv Hayosa Adam Lavade, as the Torah says, Hashem says, it's not good that man should be alone. So just the fact that so he should always be married. Once he has enough children to satisfy the mitzvah of Puruvu, then we're saying he's allowed to be married to a woman who otherwise is not who's not going to be able to bear children. But to be married, that he has to be. That's one version. The Ikadamri. Others say that we can learn the Mishnah differently. Ha yeshle bonim bottom of Piri Viriya u bottle nami meisha. On the other hand, there are those who are medayik the other way around from the Mishnah. That the implication is that not only he could be bottled from Piri Viriya at that point, but rather that he could even be bottled from being married. He's allowed to stay single. Now, according to the first Lashon, in other words, what we're doing is we're focusing on the fact that the Mishnah says, lo yivotel adam me'piru v'rivya, unless he has children, rather than it could have used the expression, lo yivotel adam me'isha, implying that there's never any reason that a person should be without, that a man should be without a woman, without a wife. There's only the question, does she have to be bas bonim, does she have to be a wife who's capable of having children or not? That'll depend whether he was already mekayim puruhu. According to the second Lashon, on the other hand, Tosva says, we're focusing on the fact that the Mishnah could have phrased it differently. The Mishnah could have said that if he has children, then he's allowed to marry a wife who's not bas bonim, who's not capable of having children. And the implication then would be that once he has children, then he still has to have a wife, just she doesn't have to be bas bonim. The fact that it doesn't phrase it that way, maybe we could infer that the Mishnah is saying that once he's done Puruvu, not only does he not have a mitzvah to make sure to have more children, but also there doesn't even need to be married. in which case, name a tevet yurta de Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. In that case, that would contradict what Rav Nachman tells us in the name of Shmuel, because Rav Nachman is telling us that also lo adam sheyamid lamed v'lo yisha, and the Mishnah seems to be implying that it would be fine once he did truavu to remain unmarried. And the answer is loy. Not necessarily is that what the Mishnah is implying. You could say there are three possible cases. Eim loy bonim noise isha bas bonim. If he the bechlal doesn't have children yet, or not enough children to fulfill pruvu, then he has to get married to a woman who is capable of having children. Yesh lebanim. Now, if he has children, he still. There are not three cases, but there's two cases. Yesh lebanim, noise isha delav bas bonim. All it is he still has a chiyuv to get married because, as Rav Nachman had said, quoting the pasuk, loy tov hayosa adam levade. It's not good for him to remain unmarried, but. At that point, because he's already fulfilled pruavu, then she can be not bas bonim. She can be a woman who's not capable of having children. She's old, or she's infertile, or whatever it is. But he's still, the Mishnah is not necessarily implying that he can get away without being married at all. Now, naftamina. Now, what's the practical difference? I mean, limko sefer Torah b'shvil bonim. Now, normally, you're not allowed to sell a sefer Torah for most purposes. Now, Tosfos says, I mean, what do you mean? Why is the Gemara even asking Nafkamina? Obviously, there's a big Nafkamina. Can you marry a woman who's not Bas Bonim or not? So Tosfos says one possibility is we take that out. We're just saying another Nafkamina is to sell a Sefer Torah. Also, now what it is normally you're not allowed to sell a Sefer Torah for any purpose because the money that you would get for the Sefer Torah has a very high level of Kedusha. So you wouldn't be allowed to just sell it and use the money for something else. However, there are a few exceptions. We learned about them in Masechta Megillah. One of them is that a person is allowed to sell a Sefer Torah in order to raise money to get married. So now what happens is, so if he doesn't have children yet and he has a Sefer Torah, then he sells the Sefer Torah in order to raise money to be able to get married, to be able to attract a woman who will be able to have children. According to this, what we're saying now in the Gemara, if he already has children from a previous marriage, then it's still a mitzvah for him to get married. However, the mitzvah is not of such a great caliber that it should warrant him selling a Sefer Torah. Instead, let him marry an infertile woman or an old woman, where marrying them is likely to be cheaper because they don't expect him to provide such a large dowry or whatever it's called when the money is that the chosin gives, the nichsin melorg and nichsin tzayin barzel, which we'll learn about in the next parak. So then, in other words, he'll be able to attract a wife more cheaply if she's not a bas bonim, because fewer people are interested in marrying such a woman, and therefore, so that's what it means. In other words, he should get married, but then that doesn't warrant selling a sefer Torah for the purpose. So Tosfos mentions a possibility that no matter what, whether he has children or not, we can say it is a mitzvah to marry a bas bonim. Ideally, he should marry a woman who can have children, as the Gemara is going to talk about later on Samach Beis Amud Beis, that there's still an inyan for him to have more children when he's older as well. What we're saying is when the choice is selling a Sefer Torah or marrying a woman who is bas bonim, so then if he already has children, then not selling the Sefer Torah takes precedence. But if other things being equal, he can marry a bas bonim, then according to that opinion, it would be better, even according to that understanding of the Mishnah, it would be better if he does that. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Bes shama oimim shna. Now, obviously, as with all other mitzvahs, obviously, you know, if a person can't, they can't. If a person is physically not able to have children, then they can't. Same principles. If a person doesn't have we learned in Chagiga, for example, a person doesn't have legs, then they're potter from aliyah, or a person is lame or whatever, they're potter from aliyah l'regel. So obviously, you know, if a person is physically incapable, they're physically incapable. That's that. But we're talking about when they're physically capable. So the Mishnah had continued. Bishamayim shnei zchorim. Bishamay says that the minimum to fulfill pruvu is two boys. So my time, I would debate Shammai. Why does Bishamai say that? The syllable is easy to understand. They bring from the Pasuk when Hashem created the world. But why does Bishamai say two boys? So the answer is Yafin and Moshe. They say because we learned from the case of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yichdi b'nei Moshe, Gershom ve'Eliezer. Moshe only had two children, and they were two boys, Gershom and Eliezer. And we never see that Moshe made any efforts to have any more children. In fact, as the Gemara is going to say soon, he separated from his wife at some point, which famously that was why Miriam thought that he was doing wrong by that, and Hashem explained to her that he's not. So therefore, Vesh Shammai says, you see that you can learn from Moshe that two boys is enough to be yotz of the mitzvah. The Aruch HaNer, by the way, points out, he says, why is the Gemara bringing a pasuk from Divrei Yamim? We already have the two sons of Moshe listed in Chumash. He says, because from Chumash, fine, it mentions the two sons of Moshe. It doesn't necessarily mean that Moshe didn't have daughters as well. It didn't list them because they don't come up anywhere in the story. But in Divrei Yamim, where as much as possible it lists complete families, and many times it lists girls as well, then why doesn't it mention any girls? Evidently, Moshe actually didn't have any. He only had two boys. Or Beis Hillel. Now, what does Beis Hillel answer to that? They say, Yafin and Mibri Yasa Shalolam. On the other hand, as they say in the Mishnah, we can learn from when Hashem created the world that he created a man and a woman. So the question is, Beis Shammai Leilfin Mibri Yasa Shalolam. So why doesn't Beis Shammai agree with that? The answer is because they say, Ein Donin Efsher Mishi'i Efsher. Because you can't, we've had this concept before in the Masechta, you can't derive what's possible from what's impossible. By Maisa Bereshis, there was no other alternative but for a woman to be created, because otherwise, how is the human race going to get started unless there's a man and a woman? So necessarily there, Hashem had to create one man and one woman. But after that, in future generations, even if you only have boys, say Beis Shammai, fine, you yourself haven't contributed any girls to the world. So what? There's any number of girls in the world where your boys can marry them and then continue the human race that way. So therefore, Beis Shammai says better to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. Marsha, by the way, points out that we learned about this Ein Donin Efsher Mishi'i Efsher earlier in the Masechta when we were talking about the Dinim of Gerus, and there we had Rabbi Akiva says Ein Donin Efsher Mishi'i Efsher, and here Beis Hillel seems to be saying we have no problem with that. So the halacha is like Beis Hillel, the halacha is also like Rabbi Akiva. So what is it? Do we Donin Efsher Mishi'i Efsher or not? Marsha says, the difference is over here that after all, Beis Hillel has a very logical reason behind their opinion that the fact is that is how the world was created. And not because that's how the world was created, that's the reason they say in the Mishnah, but because also the fact is you yourself are a couple, you're a husband and wife. So it makes sense that you should have, the minimum you should have to do is replace yourselves for the next generation, that there should be a man and a new man and a new woman in the world. So therefore, so Beis Hillel might well say that normally we would say Ein Donin Efsher Mishi'i Efsher, but over here they have such a strong logical basis for their opinion, not just to learn from Briyas Shel Olam, but also to learn from the fact that you need to replace yourselves for the next generation. Then therefore they say that's a good enough reason to say that in this case we're going to learn Efsher Mishi'i Efsher. Okay, so the question is, why doesn't this Hillel learn from Moshe, where we're saying that Moshe only had two boys and they should learn from that two boys is enough? The answer is Amri Lach, this Hillel will answer you, Moshe Midaita Hudavad, because Moshe actually did it on his own, meaning Moshe was a special case because Hashem is constantly speaking with him, and therefore he had to be ready at all times, and for that reason he had to be separated from his wife. As we know, in Parshas Baal Loscha, that's exactly what happened. When Miriam starts speaking against Moshe and saying what makes him think he's different than any other Navi, so right away, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk over there, Hashem on the spot calls Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam to come to the Ohel Moed, and Miriam and Aaron are in a panic because they're not Tohar at the moment, and they have to go and rush to the mikveh before they can speak with Hashem, and then Hashem explains to them that's exactly the situation Moshe is in. I can speak to him at any moment, therefore he has to separate from his wife. So Hillel was going to say that Moshe was a special case. So therefore you can't learn from him. Therefore you can't learn from him to everyone else. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, Shloisha Dvarim Osa Moshe Midaito. There are three things that Moshe came up with to do on his own. V'eskima Daito L'das HaMokim. And in each of those cases, what he thought of agreed with what Hashem said as well. Namely, the three are Pirash Min Isha, that he separated from his wife, the Shibir HaLuchas, and that he broke the first Luchas, the Hosef Yemechad, and then he added one day before Matan Torah. So with each one of those, let's go through how Moshe derived that he should do that, and how we see that Hashem agreed with him. So Pirash Min Isha Mai Dorash, what did he darshan to realize that he should separate from his wife? Omar, so he says to himself, the whole Jewish people, where the Shechina only spoke to them the one time by Matan Torah, the Kovalahem Zman, and Hashem set up in advance telling them when that's going to happen, And yet Amra Torah al tigshu alisha, and still the Torah told them don't approach your wives. Where what the point of it is, in other words, they should be tahor for matan Torah. So he says, ani shem yuchad l'dibur b'chol shah v'shah. Well then I am constantly on call to be spoken to by Hashem at any moment. V'loy kavol izman, and Hashem didn't set up any particular time. Hashem could come at any moment and speak to me. Allah's kama v'kama. How much more so that I should separate from my wife so that I'm always tahor whenever Hashem wants to speak to me. The scheme of daitel das amokim. Now this kavachomer that Moshe came up with, Hashem agreed to. Shenema, as the pasuk says, after matan Torah, Hashem tells the Jewish people. Moshe is telling this over many years later, at the end of the 40 years. But Moshe is repeating to them what happened at the time that Hashem told him, Leich emor lahem shuvu lachem la'alechem. Go tell them to return to your tents. Where return to your tents also means to your wives. So go resume normal family life. And then the next passage continues. You, Moshe, stand here with me. In other words, Hashem is agreeing with Moshe that he is an exception and he should remain separated and he should remain separated from his wife. Tosfos, by the way, asks, in that case, if this happened at Matan Torah already, that Moshe separated from his wife, why did it take all the way till Parshas Bahaloscha, where we're having that was over a year later? Matan Torah was on Vav or Zion Sivan, you have the different opinions, in the first year of Matan Torah. The following year, Chof year, they leave House Sinai, they start traveling to get to Eretz Yisrael. Then, when they were in a place called Chatzeros, so they had the month over there where they were eating the slav and so on and so forth. After that, they go to Chatzeros, and there Miriam speaks against Moshe. Why'd she wait over a year from Matan Torah? So Tosfos answers, based on a medrash, that they only found out about it at that time. What happened was that earlier in Parshas Bahaloscha, yeah, Moshe says to Hashem, I can't handle the people anymore. They're too difficult for me. So Hashem tells him, appoint 70 Zkenim, and they will help you lead the people. And also Hashem gave those 70 Zkenim a little bit of Moshe's nevuah. So now the Medrash says, the Sifri says, that Miriam was Miriam at first was very happy. You know, how their wives are so fortunate, their husbands became Nevi'im. And then Tzipora tells her, actually, you should feel bad for them. Now their husbands are going to separate from them the same way as my husband separated from me. So now the whole story came out, and now Miriam found out what's going on. Tosfos also adds, even though we're saying Hashem agreed with Moshe, they figured, okay, but Moshe shouldn't have initiated it in the first place. Once he did, then Hashem was willing to go along with it. Doesn't mean they still held that Moshe shouldn't have done it in the first place. And that's why Hashem explained to him that, no, their premise is wrong. Mind you, I mean, Tosfos says anyway that Moshe's Kavachomer was not exactly airtight. First of all, just because Hashem said to the Jewish people one time not to do Piri V'Rivia doesn't necessarily mean that for somebody, namely him, it should last forever. And also maybe the Aseres HaDibros or something special. But anyway, Moshe did make this Kavachomer, and Hashem agreed with him that it is a good enough, that it is a valid Kavachomer, and therefore he separated from his wife. So again, this Hillel is saying, Bishama, you're saying that Moshe had only two boys and then he stopped, and that shows that's good enough. That was a special case, but that doesn't necessarily show that ordinarily you'd be Yotze Pru Avu with that. So that was the first one. Next, Shibiras Aluchas Mai Darash. Why did Moshe break the Luchas? What did he darshan to hold that it was the correct thing to do? Omar, he said to himself, Uma Pesach Shu Echa Meshesh Meis Ushloshes Mitzvahs, Madach the Koran Pesach, which is only one out of 613 mitzvahs, Omra Torah called Ben Nechor Lo Yechaboy, and yet the Torah says that any Ben Nechor should not eat from the Koran Pesach, where the word Ben Nechor means, on the face of it, the word Ben Nechor, a son of a stranger, sounds like it means a goy. However, we learn that it also means not just that goy is not allowed to eat from the Koran Pesach, that's true, but it also means shenisnachru maisa v'ovim shemashmayim, a yid who acts in a way that's foreign to Hashem, namely a yid who has abandoned Hashem and converted to another religion, who is worshiping Avodah Zarah. So then the Koran Pesach then, a ben nechor, a yid who shmadzach, is not allowed to eat from it. So then Moshe says, HaTorah Kula v'Yisrael Mumrim. Well, here we have the entire Torah, and the Jewish people collectively are Mumrim, because they're worshipping an eagle. Alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that we can't give the Torah to them under those conditions. The schema daita l'das amakim, and we know that Hashem, that what he thought of agreed with what Hashem said, meaning Hashem agreed the other way around. Maybe it's the Hashem agreed with him, but we're using a more respectful term for Hashem. Because afterwards, Hashem tells him that you should go carve out a second set of luchos to replace the first one, asher shibarta, which you broke. Now, what's that expression, asher shibarta? It could have said shesh shibarta. It didn't have to say anything at all, because obviously the first luchos are the ones that was broken. But omer shlokish, it means omer le'akadosh baruch le'moshe, yishar koichacha shibarta. Hashem tells Moshe, may your strength be increased. So the word asher is more than yishar, that you broke the luchos. In other words, Hashem agreed that what Moshe had done was the right thing. Why that is, there's a number of points in it. One of them being that Rashi brings on Psal Lecha, a marshal from the Medrash about a queen or a noble lady who there was a suspicion of znus on her. So the Shushvin, her close friend, ripped up the Ksuba, figuring at least this way she'll be judged as an unmarried woman rather than as a married woman, so it'll mitigate her punishment. And then afterwards, the Shushvin has to write a new Ksuba. So the same way over here, Moshe figured it'll mitigate the severity of what the Jewish people have done. If there's no luchas, and in effect, therefore, they're still only engaged to Hashem rather than married. There's no Ksuba. So for that, and so that was one reason. And in fact, we have at the end of the Torah, as we know, the last words that it says, La'ene Ko Yisrael, Rashi mentions over there that La'ene Ko Yisrael refers to the strength that Moshe showed in breaking the luchas. And there's a famous sicha where the Rebbe talks about why is that the ultimate thing that Moshe did, that it's mentioned last in the Torah among all his accomplishments, because with that he demonstrated that the Jewish people, that saving the Jewish people, is even more precious to him than the Torah, and Hashem approved of that. So that's the second thing that Moshe did on his own, which then Hashem agreed with him. Again, Tosfos points out it's not exactly an airtight Kal Vachomer, but nevertheless Hashem did agree with him on it. One reason why Tosfos may be pointing out in each of these cases that the Kal Vachomer is not so airtight is because if it is, then it comes out that it's the equivalent of Hashem saying it directly. Then we can't say that Moshe came up with it on his own. So the fact to call it that Moshe came up with it on his own, it must in fact be that there is some flaw in that Kal Vachomer, where therefore we have to understand it differently in order to make it work. And nevertheless, we're saying Hashem still accepted it. The third item is, Hosef Yom Echad Midaito, my Dorash. Why did Moshe add an extra day before Matan Torah? Dichtiv, because Hashem told him, Bekidashtam Hayom Umar. Hashem tells him, before Matan Torah, you should make the Jewish people holy today and tomorrow. So Moshe figured, Hayom Kimacher. It means today has to be just like tomorrow. Ma Mocher Leila Imai. Now, when does a Jewish day begin? By night. And Mocher is going to have the day, is going to have the night with it. In other words, Hashem is telling this to him on Dalad Sivan. So Hashem is telling it to him rather on Gimel Sivan. On Gimel Sivan, Hashem is telling him, "Bikidashtam hayoyim u'mocher." No, it is on Dalad Sivan. So Hashem is telling him today, Dalad Sivan, and tomorrow, Hey Sivan, make them holy. And then, Bayom HaShlishi, on the third day, Vav Sivan is going to be Matan Torah. Moshe figures like this. The second day, Hey Sivan, is going to be a complete day with the night followed by the day. The night going into Hey Sivan and then the day of Hey Sivan. Therefore, Hayoim, the first day of the Prisha, the first day of him making them holy and separating them from their wives and putting the boundary around Har Sinai and so forth, also has to be Hayoim Leila Imai. Today, the first day, also has to be a complete day beginning from the night before. And it's too late for that. The night going into Dalad Sivan has already passed because Hashem only spoke to Moshe during the daytime. Therefore, Moshe figured it has to be 2 days besides for today. So therefore, so now you have the different, you actually have the different opinions in Masech the Shabbos, whether the Torah was given on Vav Sivan or Zayin Sivan. But so let's not talk about it in terms of days of the month, rather let's talk about it in terms of days of the week. Everybody agrees, the Gemara says over there, everybody agrees the Torah was given on Shabbos. So in other words, what happened was Hashem spoke to Moshe on Thursday morning and told him, "Bikidashtam hayom," or on Wednesday morning, rather. Hashem spoke to him on Wednesday morning and told him, "Bikidashtam hayom u'mocher," make them holy today, which is Wednesday, and tomorrow, which is Thursday, and Friday, the Torah will be given. Instead, Moshe figures that we need to have two complete days. Wednesday doesn't count because already the night going into it, Tuesday night, has already passed. Therefore, Hashem must mean that we need a full day Wednesday night and Thursday day, and another full day Thursday night and Friday day, and then the Torah will be given Shabbos morning. So he delayed it by one day. The schema daita l'das hamakim, and what he thought of, Hashem agreed with. Because we see, in fact, that Shechina did not rest on Har Sinai, and Hashem did not start speaking the Aseret HaDibros until Shabbos. So we see that Hashem agreed with Moshe to add that extra day. In fact, there is a famous point that the Magen Avraham makes on this. He says that this is a source in Torah Shebichsav for the concept. Where do we have that the Chachamim are able to add a second day of Yom Tov? We have Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golius. In the Torah, of course, you only have each Yom Tov is one day. Where do the Chachamim have the authority to add a second day? He says we see from here that Moshe had the authority to add an extra day before Matan Torah, and Hashem agreed with him.
How can you make a Kenyan on Shabbos? And giving the Torah on Shabbos was making a Kenyan, basically.
So you could ask how Hashem is able to do Malachas on Shabbos anyway. You know,
that's what I'm asking.
Okay, so listen, so let me explain. So I'm saying, don't just ask about a Kenyan. Ask about the Medrash that tells that somebody once asked Rabbi Akiva this. He says, how is it Hashem is watering the plants on Shabbos and doing all kinds of things? And Rabbi Akiva answers him, your person is allowed to carry inside their own chotzer the same way, the whole world is Hashem's chotzer. Now, there's further on that, there's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about further on that. So how does that answer the question? You're still not allowed to water plants in your chatzar on Shabbos and so forth. And the gist of the answer is, on Shabbos, the world as a whole is on a higher level. It's more encompassed within Elikus than it is during the rest of the week. So therefore, in other words, the same way as a person is able, let's say, to digest food inside their body, even though that's various chemical workings and whatever, which you wouldn't be allowed to do those in a lab on Shabbos, but they're allowed to be done inside your own body. The same way on Shabbos, in effect, the whole world is inside Hashem, much more visibly so than it is during the week. Therefore, when Hashem is making a kinyan on Shabbos, there's not a separate entity that he's making a kinyan with. All of this is taking place within Elikus, and therefore it's allowed. Anyway, so going back to the reason why we brought all this in is, again, because Vishilo was saying the fact that Moshe stopped having children after two boys is not because he held that, like you, Vishamai, that two boys is enough, but rather because he had to, because at that point he realized that Hashem is speaking to him on a constant basis and he has to always be ready. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Tanya, we had so far two opinions. Now we have another opinion. Rav Nosson Omer, that Rav Nosson says, Beshamai Omer Shnei Zchorim Ushtei Nekeves, that according to Rav Nosson's version of Beshamai, it's not enough to have just two boys. According to him, you have to have two boys and two girls. And Basilo says you need one boy and one girl. So according to Rav Nosson's version of Bais Hillel is the same as in our Mishnah, but his version of Bais Shammai is that you have to have two boys and two girls to be Yotze Peruhu. So the Omer of Hona, my time is that Rav Nosson al libid Bais Shammai. Why does Rav Nosson say that? So dichtiv, because you have by Adam and Chava, but Tosef lolades es ochiv es hovel. The Pasuk says that. And then the Pasuk says that Chava gave birth, and she had Cain, and then it says she gave birth Es Ochiv Es Hovel. Now, why the extra S means Hevel va'achoise, Cain va'achoise. It means that she bore Hevel as well as a sister, and similarly, Cain had been born together with a sister. In fact, actually, the Medrash says it differently. Actually, with Cain, there was one twin sister, and with Hevel there were two. There were triplets. But anyway, the point is, so Rav Nosson is saying that Bais Shammai says, therefore, that you see that they had four children right there. They had two boys and two girls. Uchtiv, and you have later on, after Hevel was killed, and later on, Chava had another child called Shais. And she says, why does she name him Shais? Ki shos li alekim zerach, because Hashem placed for me another child, tachas hevel, instead of hevel, ki harog et koyin, because Kayin had killed him. Implying, in other words, that she's saying, right now, after Hevel was killed, then at this point, my husband and I, Adam and I, have not been yotze, pru or gul, because now we don't have two boys and two girls. Therefore, now she's grateful when she has Shais, because now, once again, they fulfilled the mitzvah of pru or gul. So therefore, says Rav Nassin, so Beis Shammai says, you see that you have to have two boys and two girls. So v'rabbanan, what are the chachamim answer to that? Which would mean the Beis Hillel, even according to Rav Nassin, and the other chachamim who don't have Beis Shammai learn it that way. They say, oh, do you, who do come modus? Doesn't mean that she's saying that without this, my mitzvah is incomplete. She's just thanking Hashem that I'm not left. That I, even though I lost a child, but now I have another one. Now I have another one instead of him. So I'm thankful to Hashem that He gave me another child. Not that she's saying that without that I wouldn't be fulfilling pruvu. Okay. Now Tanya Idach, we learn in another brisa. Rav Nosson, another brisa says that Rav Nosson says Beis Shammai Amim Zocher Unekeva, or Beis Hillel Amim Oy Zocher Oy Nekeva. According to the second version of Rav Nosson, he says, Beis Shammai hold like Beis Hillel of our Mishnah, that you need a boy and a girl. Beis Hillel, according to this version, requires either a boy or a girl. And with that, Beis Hillel says that your yotz approval. So Omar Rava, my time of the Rav Nosson, I live with Beis Hillel. So why, so Rav Nosson's version of Beis Shammai, in Rav Nosson's understanding of Beis Shammai in this version is easy enough to understand. The same way as Beis Hillel in the Mishnah, they're learning from Bria Sa'olam. But why, according to Rav Nosson's version of Beis Hillel, would a boy or a girl be enough? The answer is, because so why is my time of the Rav Nosson, I live with Beis Hillel? The reason is, Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Loi soihu bra, Hashem did not create the world for emptiness. Lo sheves yitzara, He formed the world in order to be settled. So good, once you had a child, then you have v'ha'avad le'sheves. So at this point, by having even one child, you've made the world be more settled. You've contributed to the human race. So therefore, Beis Hillel says that that's good enough, according to this version of Rav Nosson. The halacha is like Beis Hillel in our Mishnah. So therefore, you need a boy and a girl to be yotzeh. And we're going to talk about later on what we're going to talk about later on Amud Beis. We're going to talk about more details within that. So first of all, the Gemara says itmar. Now we have a discussion of Amoraim. What if a person had children and he was a guy and then he became a ger? Rabbi Yochanan Amakim Pirivirivya. Rabbi Yochanan says that's good enough. With that, he was Makayim Pruavu. He does not need, now, as we said at the beginning of the Gemara, he doesn't need, he still needs to get married, but because he's not supposed to be without a wife, as Rabbi Nachman said at the beginning of the Gemara, but he doesn't have to now necessarily marry a woman who's capable of having children. It would be fine if he marries an old lady or an Ilonis or what have you, according to Rabbi Yechim. But Resh Lakish Shama Loikim Piri Virivya. Resh Lakish says he has not yet been Mekayim Piri Virivya. The children that he had when he was a goy don't count, says Resh Lakish. Rav Yechon, Ramakim, Piri, Virivya, Deha Havale, because after all, he has children at this point. So the fact that they were when he was a goy doesn't matter. But a Shlok Hashem, Alokim, Piri, Virivya, because he says, Gerishin is Gai, Kotin Shonel, Dami. A Ger, when he becomes a Ger, is considered like a newborn child. So therefore, whatever happened beforehand belongs to a different life, in effect, and therefore he's not Yotze. And the Gemara says, "V'ozdu l'taymayu." Now they're both going according to their respective shittis, the itmar, because we have another discussion. If a person had children when he was a goy and then he became a ger, Rabbi Yechanan Amar, "Ein loy b'chor l'nachla." Rabbi Yechanan says, regarding nachla, regarding which child, which son of his gets the double portion, there is none. D'ahavalei reishis oinay, because after all, the pasuk phrases it. When it talks about the Bechor getting the double portion, the expression is that the Bechor is Reishis Oinai, the first of his strength. In other words, the first child, the first son that he fathered. Well, he already fathered children. He was a guy. Therefore, there's no more Reishis Oinai. But a Shlokish Amit. So the children that he had before, we're not talking about, because if they remain goyim, whether they remain goyim or whether they become gerim, they don't yashin him. They don't yashin him. What we're talking about is if after he became a ger, he married and he married and had Jewish children. He was already married to a goyter from before and remained married to her when she was in Skyo, and he remained married to her, whatever. And they have more children. Rabbi Yechanan is saying none of those children are b'chor. As far as now, but a Shlokish Omar, Yeshla b'chol nachla. Rish Lakish says he does have a child as far as nachla because ger shenis gair katan shenoy l'dami. Because again, a ger when he's converted is considered like a newborn. So therefore, whatever happened before is not considered. Now the Gemara says, why do we need both of these machloikas? And aren't they both expressing the same point? So the Gemara says, "Otzricha." We need the machloikas. We need both machloikas in to understand clearly what Rabbi Yochanan holds and what Rish Lakish holds. The iashmin and bahi kamaisa. If we were only told about the first one, about the machloikas, whether he was mekayim pru or vu with the children that he had when he was a goy, then we would say bahi ka'am Rabbi Yochanan. You know why Rabbi Yochanan says in that case he's yotze pru or vu mishum de meikranami bnei piriviribyaninu, because after all, beforehand they were shayach to pru or vu as well. In other words, so Rashi learns that what it means is that the mitzvah of pru or vu applies to them as well. When it first says vayom elahem pru or vu, when Hashem says it to Adam and Chava, and afterwards he says it to Noach, that means all of humanity. So that's how Rashi learns. Tosfos learns differently. It doesn't mean that goyim are chayiv and pru or vu, says Tosfos. It means, though, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that a goy's children are called after him. Unlike, we're going to say soon, an Eved, even though he may have biological children, they're not called after his name, but a goy's children, as the Gemara is going to say soon, are lahalacha called after his name. So therefore, in that sense, he is shayach to the concept, so even if he doesn't have the mitzvah of pru or vu, he is shayach to the concept of having children who bear his name. So there you would say that Rabbi Yochanan says he's yotze pru or vu. Aval inyan nachla, but when it comes to inheritance, the labne nachla ninu, after all, the children that he had as a goy are not going to inherit from him. So Rashi explains that actually when he was a goy, then they would. Rashi brings from a Gemara in Kedushin that says that minat Torah, a son who's a goy, yarshins from his father a goy. However, the whole concept of b'chora, of a double portion, only applies within Jews, because that mitzvah was only given, is always only given in Parashas Kisetze, which is long after the Torah was given. So certainly once the guy becomes a ger, then his children are not yarshining him anyway. But Rabbi Yochanan might well say there that since they're not bnei nachla, they're not shayach to the double portion. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan would agree with Rish Lakish that the children he had when he was a goy don't count because none of them are relevant as far as bechorah, and therefore we would say that the first son that he had with his Jewish wife is a bechorah. So therefore we need to be told that he says not. And conversely, if we only had the machloekas about bechorah, then he would say b'ha'ka amar Rish Lakish. Only in that case does Rish Lakish say that there is bechora for the reason we just said, because these goyish children are not shayach to having to getting a double portion. Aval bahi ema modulei l'Rabbi Yochanan. But in the first case about pruvu, maybe he agrees to Rabbi Yochanan because the goyim are bnei piri v'rivya. Again, according to Rashi, that piri, the mitzvah pruvu applies to them, and according to Tosfos, the fact that their children do bear their name. Tzricha. So therefore, we need both machlokes. There is, incidentally, in this connection, there's a footnote in a sicha where in one of the later years in Nunalif that ever was talking about Sfiras Ha'omer, and about in particular you have the famous question that comes up every year: if a goy is nisgayer during Sfiras Ha'omer, or if a child becomes bar mitzvah during Sfiras Ha'omer, can they count with a bracha? Given that until now they didn't have a chiyuv of counting. So one thing that Eber points out over there is that with a child, you can say the fact is he was counting beforehand. Fine, he didn't have a full chiyuv of counting, but nevertheless, you can say the days he was counting the days. Therefore, he can still continue afterwards, even after he's by mitzvah. And then Eber draws an analogy with what we're saying. Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here that even though the fact is that when he was a goy, he was mekayim what he could as far as pru or vu. Rabbi Yochanan agrees that there is the concept of gerushin eskayach to katan shenoy l'dami. But since, as a matter of halacha, it's not just a matter of the physical reality that he had children, it's more a matter of the reality in halacha that those children are considered his children in halacha, then therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says that's good enough for him to be yotze pru or vu. In the same way, the days that the child counted before he became bar mitzvah also have a certain validity in halacha, and therefore he can continue counting with a bracha afterwards. Anyway, so those are the opinions of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. You have, by the way, within that, you have the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, as it usually is, but you do have a machlokas with Shonim. What about, does this apply only if those children themselves became gay? The Rambam and many other Rishonim hold that yes, that only if those children become gayrim as well, can we say that the father was Yotze, that the father was Yotze Pruvu, but if they remain goyim, then no. And that's how it's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. On the other hand, the Nosi Kalim over there bring for the Maharil, and also that Tosfos over here seems to imply that as well, that maybe he's Yotze regardless, even if they didn't convert. Okay. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, how can you tell me that the children that a goy has are not considered his, and therefore that now you're going to tell me that those children don't count towards Pruvu? We find a pasuk where a goy is named after his father. But Esahi, at that time, the pasuk described, you have the whole story where Chizkiyahu became sick and Yeshaya came and told him eventually that Hashem is going to do a nes on your behalf and he's going to make you healthy and the sun is going to go backwards, etc. And the pasuk is, but Esahi, Shalach Beroidach Baladon ben Baladon Melach Babel. At that time, Beroidach Baladon, the son of Baladon, the king of Babel, sent messengers to Chizkiyahu to find out what had happened. So we see that the Pasuk calls him the son of his father. The Orachon there asks, I mean, aren't there any number of places in the Torah where we have somebody is named somebody the son of his father? Bilam ben Ba'or, for example. You have any number of examples. Hadad ben Bedad, etc. He says, because when the Pasuk is telling something derogatory about them, sure, you could say that it's telling us that he's a Rosha, the son of a Rosha. That's a hereditary thing. But here, on the face of it, what Beroidach Baladon is doing is a good thing. He's very impressed by the nest that Hashem did for Chizkiyahu, and he wants to know more about it, and he wants to develop a closer relationship with Chizkiyahu. And we see that the Posit calls him by his father's name, showing, Rabbi Yochanan says, that even for praiseworthy purposes, where the Torah is mentioning him by his father's name, implying that he's considered legitimately his father's son. So in other words, therefore, so how can you tell me that a goy's son is not considered his son as far as Pruvu, when we see here the Torah clearly calls him that. Amalei, sort of Rish Lakish answers, the Yosin Ovid Bechavim, Islu Chayis. Sure, when they're all goyim, then they're still considered to have Yichus. Then we say that the son bears his father's name. This Gairu Leslu Chayis. But I'm arguing that once they became a Ger, Gershin is Gairu, then you can't say that they're considered their father's child anymore. Had he become a ger, or had his father become a ger, then Rish Lakish says, yeah, the pasuk wouldn't be calling him the son of his father. Omar Rav, so the Gemara continues that Rav says, or on the side here, it says it's really supposed to read up Abba, Hakol Moidin Be'eved She'en Lechayis. Now, everybody does agree when it comes to an Eved Knani that he has no Yichus, his biological children are not considered his children, Lahalacha. And therefore, so if an Eved had children, and then later on he was freed, definitely we would say that he hasn't fulfilled Pruvu, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. Dichtiv Shvulacham Poyim Achamer, as we find that Avraham says to his servants before the Akedah, sit, stay here together with the donkey, implying Am HaDomer L'Chamer, you're a nation that resembles a donkey, and just like with a donkey, you don't say, for example, that the fact that a donkey sires children, they're not considered his children in any meaningful sense. The same way with Havadim. So the Gemara says, Maisvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A pasuk describes the psukim in Sefer Shmuel tell about how there was Mifi Boshes, was the last surviving descendant of Shaul's family, because Shaul and most of his children, Shaul and three of his sons had been killed on Har HaGilboa in the war over there with the Plishtim. He had one son, Ish-Boshes, who was assassinated. He had one more son, Ish-Boshes, who was assassinated. So now the only male descendant, Ben Achaben of Shaul at this point is a grandson named Mephibosheth, and the Pasuk says that he had a slave named Tziva, and the Pasuk says, oh, well, Tziva chamisha asabonim ve'esrim abadim, that this Tziva himself had 15 sons and 20 slaves. How he had slaves of his own is a bit of discussion in itself, because how an Eved is not able to be koina anything on his own, mashkona Eved kona rabbi. But anyway, the point is that we're focusing on the fact that it says he had children, and it calls them bonim, so we see that even an Eved Knani can validly have bonim in halacha. Omer of Achav Yaakov to Par Ben Bokar. No, all it means is, in other words, the same way as you speak of a Par Ben Bokar. In other words, that the a bucker, a male, a bull, fathers a bull, sires a baby animal, and we call that baby Pyre Ben Bucker, not in the sense of any kind of yichus, but just we're telling, in other words, we're just describing the biological reality. So the same way over here with Tziva, we're saying biologically he had 15 children, and the point is the pasuk says all of them were servants, all of them were slaves of Mephibosheth, but not that they're considered as children in any sense lahalacha. So the Gemara says yihachi hachi nami. New, then the same thing you could say as far as Berodach Baladon. Maybe it's not meant, maybe the fact that it calls him Berodach Baladon Ben Baladon is also not meant to tell us anything about his Nichus. So the answer is Chani Hosim Diachsinu Bishmayu or Bishma Da'abu. And the difference is with Berodach Baladon and other such examples, it actually says the person's name and his father's name. So that must be in order to tell us his Yichus. After all, if it was just to tell us that Berodach Baladon sent messengers to Chizkio, it didn't have to mention his father's name. Whereas with Tziva, yes, it says he has children, but it doesn't say any of their names. So therefore, that can be that it's just describing biologically he had children, and the pasuk wants to stress how many people now Mephibosheth has working for him. But not that they're considered Tziva's children in any sense, v'halom. Because after all, if it did, then it would have said the name of at least one of them. The Boisema, or another possibility, because not only we have by Berodach Baladon, where you have a Goyish king who is described with his father's name, but Yachsina B'duchta Achriti, we even have another place where Goy is given Yichus Ba'avuin Uva Abadavuin, with his father and his grandfather. Now there you can't say anymore that it's like Pyre Ben Bakr, because there wouldn't be any need to say that. So the fact that the Pasuk gives us an example of a goy where it lists his father and his grandfather shows that as goyim they're considered to have yichus. They are considered lahalacha, their father's children and their grandfather's grandchildren, which is relevant again. And so Rabbi Yochanan is saying that's relevant as far as pruavu, that now if any of them had become a ger, then they'd still have fulfilled pruavu. Again, according to the Rambam, and as it's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, only if their child also became a ger, and according to the Maharil and maybe Tosfos, maybe even if the children stayed a goy. Where do we see that a goy is misyaches by his father and his grandfather? Dichtiv, the pasuk describes how one of the kings of Yehuda, Asa, was afraid of an invasion by the king of the Aseres HaShvatim, Basha, and the pasuk says that he took all the gold from his palace and from the Beis Hamikdash and so forth by Shlochem HaMelech Asa, and the king Asa sent them El Ben Hadad Ben Tavrimon, Ben Chezion, Melech Aram. So it gives his father's name Tavrimon and his grandfather's name Chezion. Melech Aram, he's the king of Aram, Ayosha Bedamesek, who's dwelling in Damesek. That was his capital city. Lamer, and he tells him, please help me against this threatened invasion. So we see that the Pasuk calls the Goyish king by his father's name and his grandfather's name, showing, unlike with Tziva, where all it says generically is that he had children, therefore showing that with a Goy there can be such a thing as Yichus, whereas with an Evedna. Okay, continues the Gemara. It's what if a person had children, two sons according to Beis Shammai, a son and a daughter according to Beis Hillel, etc., umesu, and then those children died. Rav Huna amaki in Piri V'Rivya, Rav Huna says he was still Makai in Piri V'Rivya, even though they didn't end up having children of their own. Rav Yechanan amaloiki. Rav Yechanan says he was not Makai in Piri V'Rivya. Now, why would Rav Huna Amakiyim? Why would Rav Huna say he's Makayim Piri V'Rivya? If after all, there's no living descendants from them. Mishum de Rav Asi. The reason is based on what Rav Asi says. The Amar Rav Asi, Ein Ben David Ba Ad Sheyichlu Kol Neshamas Shebaguf. Ben David, meaning Mashiach, will not come until all the Neshamas in Guf have been used up. The explanation is that the treasury, where the Rashi explains over here and in other places in Shas, the treasury in Shemayim, where neshamas are kept, is called Guf. And once all the neshamas have been used up from there, then Mashiach will be able to come. Tosfos Yeshanim brings over here, and Maharsha brings something similar in Nida. We have other things. It says, for example, that if the Jewish people keep two Shabbosis properly, then Mashiach will come. So the answer is that sometimes you can have one neshama that includes many other neshamas. For example, you have a medrash that says where Rabbi Akiva one time tells his students that there was one woman in Mitzrayim who gave birth to 600,000 children, and he explains to them, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, who his neshama incorporated the neshamas of all the other Jewish people. So the same way, says Tosfos Yeshanim, if the Jewish people keep two Shabbos, then Hashem will arrange that the next neshama that comes down from Guf will incorporate all the other ones that are left in there, and then Mashiach can come. So the Shanema, the Pasuk says, Ki ruach milafana yatzik v'gomer. The Pasuk says, a ruach, which can mean a spirit, will win milafana yatzik v'gomer, is yato from before me. And the Pasuk continues, in neshamas ani osisi, I made the neshamas. So what that means, how we see from that in Ben David Ba, so Rashi in a different place explained that it means the ruach of Mashiach, where we say at the beginning of the Torah, Ruach Elokim, Merachef es al pnei amoyim, which refers to Mashiach, that is yatoy, that's being delayed. The word yatoy can mean to be delayed because of neshamas asher asisi, because there are neshamas, Hashem is saying, that I made, which have not yet been brought down to the world. So therefore, so going back to our Gemara now, therefore, Rav Huna is saying, it doesn't matter if the children died. At least the person accomplished that now more neshamas have been brought into the world from Guf, and therefore Mashiach has been brought closer. Therefore, he accomplished something, even if those children didn't live to have children of their own. But Rabbi Yechanan Amar Lekim Piri V'Rivya. Rabbi Yechanan, on the other hand, says he wasn't Mekayim Piri V'Rivya yet, because well, Shavit Tzarabin. And after all, the pasuk says, as we said before, that Hashem created the world in order to be settled. V'Holeka. If the children died and they didn't have children of their own, then you don't have that. You don't have Shavit Tzara. So yes, you brought down Neshamas from Guf, but nevertheless, you need more than that, says Rabbi Yechanan. So the Gemara says, Maisvi. I have a contradiction against Rav Huna. A Braisa says, further down on the Amud, Bnei Bonim Harein Kebonim. Grandchildren are considered like children. Now, it sounds like, in other words, that, so we're going to explain further down on the Amud what this means exactly, but right now, we're assuming that it means that, so let's say the grandfather, let's say Yaakov, had Yaakov had children, and one of those children died, but that child left behind a child. So now the grandfather has two living descendants. He has a daughter, and then he has a grandson, a son's son. Then the grandfather is not chayiv and piri v'rivya anymore. Now the implication is why? Because his son had a son, implying that if not, he wouldn't be yotze just from the fact we wouldn't say to begin with, Yaakov had two children. Let's say Reuven and Dinah. So now we're saying Reuven died, but he left behind a son Chanoich. So we're saying let's say Chanoich and Dinah. So now he has two living descendants. So therefore he's mekayim kruvu. But the implication is if Reuven had died without a child, then he's not yet yotze. Now, according to Rav Huna, why not? He already had a son and a daughter, Reuven and Dinah. Why shouldn't he be yotze? And the Gemara says, not necessarily, because Kitanya Hila Hashlim, because that Braisa may not be talking about to replace, but rather to fill in the number to begin with. So let's say not that we're talking about the original scenario was we thought the Braisa is talking about where Yaakov had a son and a daughter. Now let's say differently. Yaakov only had one son, Reuven. So now the Braisa might be implying that once Reuven has a daughter, then Yaakov is yotze, because now at this point there exists a man and a woman in his world in the world as a result of him. So therefore, so you could say that Reuven plus Reuven's daughter is Mekayim Yaakov's mitzvah kruvu. Not necessarily are we talking about, so now the Braisa could well be saying that even if this, at this point Reuven and his daughter die, then nevertheless Yaakov has still been yotze kruvu. But the Braisa says, Mesvi. I have another contradiction against Rav Huna. Another Braisa says, Bnei bonim harem kebonim. Grandchildren are like children. But the Braisa continues, Mes echad mehem. If one of those children dies, Oishin nimtza soris, or that child turns out to be a soris, which is that congenitally they're unable to have children. We're going to talk about that in more detail later on, and later on in the perek after next. We're going to talk about these various things of a physical characteristic that show that a person is infertile. So the Braisa says loikim piyuridya. So he wasn't mekayim kruvu. So therefore tiyuk the Rav Huna. That Braisa is a clear contradiction on Rav Huna, because according to Rav Huna, what's the problem? You brought down two neshamas from Guf. Therefore that's good enough. Doesn't matter whether they died. Doesn't matter whether they ended up being suisim or whatever. So the Gemara says, you're right, Tiyubta, that is a clear contradiction on Rav Huna, and the halacha is not like him. The halacha is like Rav Yechanan, that if the children died, if they didn't leave children of their own, as we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara, then he wasn't Yotz approval. Okay. Now let's analyze that braisa a bit. When we say bnei bonim harem kabonim, we're saying that grandchildren are like children. So what does that mean? Savra abaya lemema bra libra ubrata librata. Abaya thought to say that it means that if he had a son, so let's say in our example that we just had, Yaakov had a son Reuben, and Reuben died and left a son Chanoch, or Yaakov had a daughter Dina, and Dina died and left behind a daughter Tzipporah, then we would say that that the grandfather Yaakov is Yosef Puru, but Koshekin brother Brata, and all the more so we would say that if his daughter left behind a son, so then you would say that that's good. But Abaya thinks that the braisa means that if Reuben left behind a daughter, then that would not work. We would still say that's not good enough, because then you only have two daughters. You have Yaakov's daughter Dina, and you have his granddaughter from Reuben, Tzipporah, let's call her, and therefore that's no good. But Amalei Rava says no. L'shevet yitzara b'ya. The fact is, we're saying, why do you need pruvu in order to settle the world, and that requires there to be men and women. V'ha'ika. The fact is, you do have two descendants, and therefore that's good enough. Agos Agro actually brings that the Rambam has a different girsa, that Abaya thought to say that it doesn't work if it's the opposite sex. He thought that only if Reuben leaves a son or Dina leaves a daughter is it good, but not if Reuben leaves a daughter or Dina leaves a son. And Rava tells him, no, it doesn't matter, because L'shevet yitzara v'ha'ika, either way you have it. Because the fact is you have two descendants in the world. So even though it's true, you need both men and women, there you have, Tosfos explained, given that, to begin with, you had a son and a daughter, and at that point, as far as you knew, you're part of the period of Arabia, then therefore, yes, we can say that a son can go in place of a daughter or vice versa in the next generation. However, everybody agrees that if you have two grandchildren from one child, then that's not enough. In other words, what if Yaakov had two children, Reuben and Dina? Reuben, let's say now both of them died. Reuben left behind two children, a boy and a girl. Dina died childless. Then Rava is saying everybody would agree that Yaakov has not been Yotze Pruvu, because you have to have that the two living descendants come from two different branches, come from two different children of his own. Here, where you have two children that come from the one child and the other one died childless, we slugged up Rav Huna before, who said that if one of the children dies childless, you haven't been yotze pruvu. So therefore, the same thing over here. Even though Reuben left behind more children, but Dina didn't leave any, and therefore that's no good. So the Gemara says, "Veloy, you're telling me not? I can show you on the contrary." Didn't the Chachamim say to Rav Sheshes, you know, you should get married and you should have children? In other words, what happened was he had previously been married and he was widowed or divorced. So they told him, you know, you should really be getting remarried again, and in order to have children. In other words, they're not just telling him get married because, like we said at the beginning of the Gemara, a man's not supposed to stay unmarried. They're telling him get married because you need to have more children. But when he answers them, he says, my daughter's sons are considered like my sons. So in other words, what are we talking about? It sounds like Rav Sheshes only had a daughter, or only had, at least among his children, the only survivor with a daughter. The only one of his children who had children was his daughter. If he had sons, that apparently what happened was he had had sons and daughters, but all the sons and all of his children had died, but his daughter left behind at least a son and a daughter. And Rav Sheshes is saying, they're considered my children, and therefore I'm Yotze Pruvu, and therefore I don't have to do anything else. So we see that it does work if the two grandchildren are from the same child. The answer is Hosam de Chuya Kamadchi. The answer is Rav Sheshes is not really telling them that in fact he's not chayev. He's really just pushing them off, because in fact right now he's not capable of having children anymore. Rav Sheshes I akam epirke derabuna. As we're going to have later on Daf Samach Daled, Rav Sheshes was one of the chachamim who became infertile because of the shiurim of Rav Huna. Rav Huna used to give very long classes and used to give very long shiurim. and people didn't want to leave in the middle to go to the bathroom, we find, and we're going to see on Daf Samach Dalet Amud Beis, and it mentions it also in different other places in Shas, that when a person holds themselves back from urinating for a long time, then it can affect their fertility. It makes them it can make them become infertile. And that's what happened to Rav Sheshes. So really, Rav Sheshes is just not capable of having children anymore. But he didn't want to tell them that. He didn't want to draw attention to that. So therefore, he uses an excuse that I have grandchildren from my daughter, and that's good enough. But really, as a matter of halacha, that wouldn't work. If Rav Sheshes himself were still fertile, then he would, in fact, be obligated at this point to remarry a woman who's a bas vanim and have more children in order to be mekayim kruv. So the Gemara continues. Omalei Rabba le Rava ban Mori, minnaha milsa da amar abanim b'nei banim harem kebanim. Where is there a source in Tanakh for this concept that we're saying that grandchildren are considered like children as far as these halachas? And it's interesting. We find in a number of places in Shas where Rabba asked Rava Bar Mori these kinds of things. Apparently, Rava Bar Mori was a local expert on Tanakh, and therefore Rabba would regularly ask him where we find a source in Tanakh for such a thing. Anyway, so Rava Bar Mori answered. And Rabba continued, Ilema Mdichtiv, are you going to say it's on the basis of the pasuk in Parashas Vayetze, where Lavan says to Yaakov, Habonis b'noisai v'habonim bonai. He says, the daughters are my daughters and the sons are my sons. In other words, Lavan is saying, in effect, Yaakov, how could you accuse me that I wanted to harm you? These daughters are your wives are my daughters. Your sons are my sons, the grandsons. And in other words, how could I possibly want to harm them? So you're going to say, since the Torah quotes that those words of Lavan, then it means that shows that the grandchildren, because after all, the Yaakov's children are not Lavan's children, they're his grandchildren. So you're going to say that the Chachamim learned it from that? Can't be. Ela me'atavat soin soni hochinami. What about the next word that Lavan says? The sheep are my sheep. What does that mean? Hochinami, you're going to say the same thing that your son-in-law's sheep are considered your sheep? Obviously not. Ela dekonis minai. Rather, Lavan is just stressing the point that you acquired them from me. You have these wives because you acquired them from me with your labor. You have these children for the same reason, because you acquired your wives with your labor, and therefore you have that, the same way the sheep. So therefore, but it's not that as a matter of halacha, the grandchildren reconsidered his children. Hachanami de konis mina, it's the same thing as far as the children. So there's no proof from that pasuk. Ela meha. Rather, the proof is from a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. The pasuk is talking over there about the descendants of Shevet Yehuda, and it mentions one of them was named Chetzron. This is the same Chetzron where you have in Parashas Vayigash when it lists the 70 descendants of Yaakov who came down to Mitzrayim. So it says that Peretz, the son of Yehuda and Tamar, had two sons, Chetzron and Chomel. So now this Chetzron, the pasuk describes over there how he was married and had children. Then the pasuk says V'achar bo Chetzron. El Bas Mocher Avi Gilad. Then Chetzron had relations with the daughter of Mocher, who was the father of Gilad, where Mocher is from Shevet Menashe. The fact that it says he had relations, Mephoshim say, that's what it means. He didn't marry her, he just took her as a Pilagish or something. Before Matan Torah, such things were allowed. Anyway, so he had relations with her. Batelet Loya Sguv, she bore him a son named Sguv. So now this is Guv. Let's consider his father is from Shevet Yehuda. His mother is from Shevet Menashe. Uchtiv minim machir yorde mechokikim. Later on, the pasuk says from machir there came mechokikim, which means lawgivers. Now who would those be? That refers to the uchtiv Yehuda mechokiki. We find that Yehuda is described as the lawgiver and the ruler. So in other words, what the pasuk is saying is that from machir there are descendants who are from Shevet Yehuda. Now, how does Machir have descendants from Shevet Yehuda? That's how, through Machir's daughter. So we see that the grandson Sguv, who is even from a different Shevet, he's called Machokiki, is considered Lahalacha, is considered the child of Machir. That's what it means when it says Minim Machir Yodim Machokiki. So we see from that the grandson of Machir, the Sguv, is considered as if he was Machir's child. The Gemara continues. Masnissin delav k'Rabbi Yeshua. Now, this that we said in the Mishnah, that you have to, that a person has to have children until he's Mekayim Pruvu, implying, but after that, not. Once he's been Mekayim Pruvu, we said he can marry a woman who's infertile or whatever. So the Gemara says, Masnissin delav k'Rabbi Yeshua. Our Mishnah then evidently is not going like Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanya, Rabbi Yeshua, Omer, Nasa Adam, Isha Beyaldusa, even if a man married when he was young, Yisa Isha Bezeknusa, he should still remarry when he gets older. Similarly, Hoyu, fine, that part agrees with the beginning of the Gemara, but Nasa, Hoyu Le Bonim Beyaldusa, you Le Bonim Bezeknusa. But Rabbi Yeshua says, even if he had children when he was young, he should still continue to have children when he's older. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Baburka Zras Zarecha, in the morning, you should plant your seeds over erev, and in the evening, don't let your hand be slack. So the morning and the evening means the morning and the evening of a person's life. So when he's young and when he's older, and the pasuk continues, you never know which one is going to be better, the earlier ones or the later ones. Or whether both of them are going to be good. So therefore, you should make an effort to have as many children as possible. You never know which one is going to be. As Rashi says, Yichshar, Hogun, Yorei Shemayim, and Miskayim, which ones are going to be Erelach and Yorei Shemayim and continue to exist. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua is saying you should keep on. Now, our Mishnah is implying not like Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Akiva says from this pasuk we learn, Lomad Torah b'yaldusa, Yomad Torah b'zeknusa. If a person learned Torah when he was younger, he should still continue to learn Torah when he's older, not think that he knows it all. And Hoyula Tamidim, the elder say, if he had Tamidim when he was younger, Yula Tamidim, as a Knosse, he should still not continue to have Tamidim when he's older. Shenema, Babuka Zrasarecha, the same passage that it refers to not only having physical children, but also Ruchnistic children. And in fact, we have the example with Rabbi Akiva himself. Omru, they said, Shnema also Elif Zugim Tamidim, Hoyula Rabbi Akiva, Megeves Adan Tifras. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of Tamidim scattered all over Eretz Yisrael from Geves until Antifras, or not all over Eretz Yisrael. It actually says it means that these 24,000 are just in that area from Geves to Antifras. The Kulam Mesu, with Perek Echad, all of them died during one period of the year, basically not covered, Zebazet, because they didn't show covered one to another. This is the famous thing. This is why we mourn during Sfira and why we don't listen to music and have weddings and so forth. It's all based on this. There's the famous Sikha where the Rebbe explains how do they not have covered one for another when Rabbi Akiva is the one that taught them behalf of Rebbe Kamecha, and the answer is because each one felt that their way of understanding Rebbe Akiva is the only correct one, and therefore they felt that it is part of Avos Yisrael to correct the other one's misunderstanding of Rebbe Akiva, but that's Loinago covered Zebazet. So therefore, so they all passed away. The entire world was desolate. Until Rabbi Akiva didn't give up, he went, this is what we're saying, that he's saying that even if a person has Talmidim when he's younger, he still should continue to have Talmidim when he's older as well. You never know which ones are good. As we see over here, that the five Talmidim, the second set of Talmidim, were the ones who reestablished the Torah. Ushnalahem and Rabbi Akiva taught them Torah. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Vehem midu Torah, Ba'osa Shah, they were the ones who reestablished the knowledge of the Torah at that time. So we see that Rabbi Akiva lived what he taught over here about Baburka Zras Zarech. So the Gemara says, Tonim, we learn in a Braisa, Kulam Mesimi Pesach Vadatzeres. All of them passed away between Pesach and Shavuos, which is again why we mourn during Sfira. By the way, Marasha points out with Gemara elsewhere that imply that this time of the year between Pesach and Shavuos is Dafka the healthiest time of the year. And yet we're saying that Dafka passed away during that time to show that it was Min HaShemayim. All of them died an evil kind of death. So the Gemara says, Mayhi, what kind of death are we talking about? Amar Rav Nachman, Astera. They all passed away from Astera, which is it's commonly translated as diphtheria, but whatever it is, it's something that blocks off a person's airway, so they essentially strangle to death. So that's considered misara. The Gemara elsewhere mentions it's the most painful of all the different kinds of deaths that they are. So that's what they got. And one idea is, in other words, because they were speaking disrespectfully one to another, therefore they were punished in a way that the Gemara says in other places that askara is a punishment for people who speak Lashon Hara. But therefore, so because of that tremendous tragedy, that 24,000 Talmidim passed away, and because of them, the world was desolate of Torah, and then as it is, okay, Rabbi Akiva taught new Talmidim, but still, we can only imagine how much more knowledge of Torah there would be in the world had those 24,000 survived. That is why we have the restrictions that we have now during this time of year of Sfira. Omer Simon B'Torah. We'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with more positive things about the importance of getting married.